Real Conversation is supported by the generous donations of Susie, Claire Schwab, and Evan Pearson. You can support us too at truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link. Truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link.
Hello, hello. Welcome. This is Beachy. I am back. I took a little hiatus. Had some summer fun, went on some trips, did some fun things for summer, and now it's winter time, so I'm back. Anyway, it's November the 6th, 2025, and we are heading into the winter, sadly, but holiday season, what can you say? So I do have a topic for today, and I also have a guest who I think is having trouble coming in, so I'm going to see if I can move her in here. Let's see if my moderator skills are working here. Here we go. Hello, Serena. Welcome.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me.
I am here with Serena today. She is a new member of the Truth Meets. She just came on last night and we welcomed her. And Serena, tell us where you're from and how did you come to the Truth Meets server?
Well, I'm Australian. I was born and raised in Sydney, but currently I'm living in Queensland, Australia, where it's very hot and very humid and semi-tropical, but the beaches are gorgeous, so I'm happy to be here. I've also lived overseas at various times in Asia and the UK, and I've also spent quite a lot of time in America, so you know, I've been exposed to different cultures along the way, but I feel like mentally I haven't been mainstream for many, many years. Although I continue to live, you know, an ordinary life and work a normal job, and I'm just, you know, a very average sort of person. But mentally, I'm so far away from I can't watch the news. I can't take any of it seriously. I was already drifting away before 2020, and the events of 21, 22 just solidified my awareness that I'm different.
It sounds like a lot of us here at the on the Truth Meets and surrounding servers. That's great. It sounds like you're well traveled. That is a good sign of someone with a lot of information and observation. And yeah, you can see how things are done in other places. So you did come to America. As you know, I am in California, in America. What places did you visit? I'm curious.
In terms of the West Coast, I spent a week in Los Angeles with a friend, actually on my way back to Australia after I left the UK. So LA was pretty much as I thought it would be. Great architecture in the downtown, some really nice buildings there.
Interesting.
No, but it's true, you know, and there's some great old buildings in the downtown and some beautiful restaurants. But, you know, having grown up in Sydney, the LA beaches weren't sort of anything, you know, too impressive for me, because, you know, they're quite similar, I guess. My dream was always to go to New York. I really was Probably the last television show that I watched, and oh no, maybe the last one might have been Mad Men, which is a long time ago. But
oh, I love that show. Loved it, the best.
Loved it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I actually felt really sad when it ended. But I don't think I've enjoyed a TV show since Mad Men, which is pretty well. I don't have a TV now anyway. I haven't had a television for 5 years, and I find it unwatchable. But before that, I was a big Sex and the City fan, and I actually still will sometimes watch old episodes of Sex and the City and still enjoy
them. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
And everybody watched Sex and the City. What was it about that show? It was just delightful, but and hilarious at the same time.
It was freaky, but you know, it was so influential. Even today, there's, you know, the echo of Sex and the City still influences, well, certainly popular culture, but female culture. All that, you know, all the stuff about the shoes. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, you just had you had your school shoes and some sandals for summer and a pair of sneakers and maybe, you know, another pair. You might have had four or five pairs of shoes, but you didn't have this fetish where you have like a whole room with full of shoes. I do blame I blame Sex and the City for that.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Yes, we all have shoes everywhere. Yes, I was just noticing that the other day, like, for heaven's sakes. And I threw out a bunch of shoes like about a year ago, and I'm like looking around going, man, why do I have so many shoes? And I'm not like a Sex and the City person where you put your, you know, all your spike heels in boxes and label them and have them all color coded and what have you. It's just not that. It's not like that at all. But I still have a bunch of shoes, you know, different types, you know, hiking boots and snow boots and, you know, water shoes and beach
shoes. It sounds like all your shoes actually have a purpose and a function for different activities. But books in the City, it was just really about collecting them. But New York did live up to the hype for me. I absolutely fell in love with it. I've been 4 or 5 times maybe. I spent a whole summer in Brooklyn. I was married at the time, and we rented a brownstone in Park Slope, which was just really being immersed in that Brooklyn lifestyle. We were across the road from Prospect Park, which is so many movies have been filmed there. It was the height of hipsterdom. It was peak hipster in Brooklyn at that time, and so pretentious, but also, you know, they do really good farm to table food. That hipster culture. You know, a lot of big moustaches on the guys, and what else was the hallmarks of the hipster movement? You don't see them. It's not really a thing now, being a hipster, is it?
You mean like what did they call them? What was that word they had for them? Mansexuals or something like that. metrosexuals.
Yeah, maybe that. I think maybe metrosexuals, you know, laid the foundation for hip. We're not talking about hipsters. It's like you'd go to a cafe, everything was very kitsch and gimmicky. Like you'd go to a cafe and the menu would be like inside an old book, like. And you'd open the book and, you know, they would have like old typewriters around, lying around and as decoration. Like, why? Yeah. What's that about sounds, the old typewriters?
That sounds like boho or something like, you know.
Yeah, it was. I don't know if New York is like that now or if Brooklyn is like that now. It's probably so expensive now that, you know, but this was, yeah, so, but yes.
Break time when we get back.
You've reached another top of hour on Truth Meets. Go to truthmeets.com to sign up and participate in our forums and conversations.
That's our station break that comes every 20 minutes. So FYI. Anyway, back to our discussion. Yeah, I have to say I've only been to New York once, and that was like a long, long time ago, like in the 80s. And I never wanted to go back again.
Really? Why?
I just am not a city girl. I was scared by, having to, hail a taxi, or I did not go into the subway. They told me, don't go into the subway. You'll be sorry. And so I was very young and I did not have a whole lot of experience being out in the open world by myself. So it was, scary.
But growing up in Sydney, I used to catch the train to school. And, we don't have a subway as such, not the same as New York or London. London has the underground, they call it. But, no, I thought the New York subway was great. You could go anywhere. And I did really live like a local there for about 3 months. Also traveled all around the East Coast, went to Martha's Vineyard, got the ferry across to Martha's Vineyard, where I believe the Obamas have a home and God knows what goes on there. And but beautiful, and New York state, upstate New York. I just love the countryside up there, the trees, the seasons, the fall, the winter.
Well, yeah, that part of the city, or I would imagine is lovely. And I've never been there. Like I said, I was only in the concrete jungle there, and the big buildings and all that city stuff. So I was not there for very long. I was only there for like 3 days. So, I've never been, I have not really experienced the East Coast at all. I mean, it only just through flying through, to Europe or to the south.
You've stopped there briefly. I think you would love the countryside. It's so beautiful. Vermont was gorgeous. Boston, I did not like Boston. Boston had a very heavy sort of vibe to me. I've heard that culturally Boston people tend to be very negative. That's what they say. And I it's just part of their sort of dialect, the way they talk, that sort of casual put downs of people. And I could really feel that in Boston. It felt negative to me. I didn't like it at all. But I enjoyed being there. I enjoy American culture. There's a lot of aspects about, America's given us such a rich culture. Well, Mad Men, look at that. I mean, when they do it well, they really do it well,
Well, yeah, like you said, the Mad Men was an extremely many layers to that show, and obviously there was the soap opera, there was all the characters and their fashions. That was fun.
Love the clothes.
but there was so much psychological innuendo in there. I found that fascinating and just telling of where we are today, how we got to where we are today. And again, the whole marketing profession in general,
advertising,
and how we're propagated by it. I mean, it's like constant, like you just said, about the Sex and the City, about all the marketing of ideas, of fashion, of how people should behave, how what your lifestyle should look like, and you know, just labels and titles and stereotypes and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things about Sex and the City that I think is quite creepy is that they encouraged women to place themselves in a category where they would, and I don't know if people still do this, but they would say things like, are you a Carrie or are you a Samantha? Well, no, I'm not a Samantha. I'm a Charlotte. No, I'm not a Charlotte. I'm a Miranda. Which one are you? And they would actually have quizzes, you know, take this quiz to figure out if you're a Miranda, or like Miranda was the high-powered business woman. She was a lawyer. And Charlotte was the traditional stay-at-home wife who just wanted to be a wife and a mother. And Samantha? Samantha was, you know, this incredibly promiscuous sexually.
Yes. Just say it. Just say it. She was the slut.
she was, but I have to say she made it look like fun until the later series, in towards the end, the last couple of series, they were humiliating. I don't know if it was the writers or whoever was obviously trying to portray her in quite a humiliating way, where she actually seemed like she was being, you know, humiliated by these guys. Whereas in the early series, it seemed like Samantha was in control. She could love him and leave him, but it got increasingly more pathetic and sad as the series.
That I believe was a nod to, well, ladies, when you get old, all your power is, you know, not there anymore. You've been relegated to, you know, because, you know, everything is wrapped around youth and, you know, beauty and all the fleeting things that, you know, you kind of start fading when you're getting older. So, and that is a huge, huge marginalization of women in general, when, you know, all your experience and your knowledge and your wisdom is, you know, just disregarded, you know, but men get aged like fine wine, you know, and they're distinguished and they're, you know, I mean,
not the ones I see around me. They're not aging like fine wine, I can assure you. It's very individual. I mean, yeah, that's the stereotype, I guess. I mean, aging is down to so many things, and you can't fight your genes, you know, and it's lifestyle, it's so many things. But, we can't control how people perceive us, I guess. But I think it's changing. I think it's changing, but there's more of a emphasis now on everyone being divided into generate, and like there's so much hate for boomers. Boomers should all die. Someone said this on a comment on a YouTube video recently. Someone actually wrote this: 90% of all our problems will be solved when the boomers have all died off.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. But yeah, I have heard some boomer bashing, and it's interesting. But again, like you said, I think it's changing somewhat, but it depends on who you're listening to and where you are in that classification, you know, like, because I feel like, you know, they demonize them, but then they also, you know, they're putting them on a pedestal because they're saying, well, they're the ones who have all the money, and they're marketing a lot to the older people who have a lot of money. Okay. And, you know, so it's kind of a mixed bag, and they don't want to piss them off because they're not going to get their, you know, their dollars if they do. So anyway,
there is a lot of dividing people up. There's another whole genre of videos where the Gen Z kids, who I guess are in their 20s, make fun of millennials. So there's this whole meme about the division where the Gen Z kids mock the millennials for wearing skinny jeans.
Well, yeah, I mean, all the generation gap, the classification, you got your Gen A, B, C, D, whatever. I don't even know when that started, but we're at X, Y, Z. You know, I don't know who starts that, but interestingly, this is kind of brings us to the topic of my show that I wanted to do today. And it's about words and how words are being used to, like we were just talking about, division, how to classify us, put us in all those labels, and, you know, chop you up into categories. And everybody has their little, separation. Yeah. It's basically separation. You know, you're this, I'm that, whatever. And that's all, again, like you said, this is the way I originally was going to start this show, and before I invited you on, synchronistically, you showed up. Anyway, I was going to start off, in the beginning was the word, right? Mm. And where do we see this? In the Bible. But in my opinion, after all my research, I think it's a mistranslation. I really believe it's vibration, because I believe vibration is what brings everything into the physical. You're sounds like you're on board with that. But again, that's not what the conversation is about. That's another topic for another show. But we still have words that, you know, have been used as a weapon against us for so long, and it works. I think about all these phrases we have, like, here's, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Remember saying that as a kid? I'm sure you probably had that.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But now, what do these words? These words are hurting us, right? I mean, look at all this cancel culture and all the pronouns and the, oh, what's your label? And, you know, everybody's got to pick a title or a label, and it, like you said, it divides you when you pick that. It pins you with some sort of a perceived description, right? You've got all these tags on you, you know, like you just said, baby boomer, Gen Z, you're a, you know, blah, 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 whatever. And it just seems like the words are getting more and more, you know, all these phrases, and they're all political. They're all political, and they're sometimes used as censors because, you know, if you call, like, just like us, or you call somebody a conspiracy theory, or, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory, and that stops a conversation
That's the end. It's like you've just completely invalidated everything that this person is, you know, that they're trying to express by using that word conspiracy. It totally shuts it down. And you're right, Beachy, there are more and more words and more ammunition, words being used as ammunition. So really, it's up to us to we have the power to not take any of it seriously. It can only have power if you buy into it and believe. For example, I can't speak Spanish. So somebody could be standing in front of me calling me all kinds of horrific things in Spanish. Well, I can't understand what they're saying, so it's not, you know, it's not going to affect me. So their words are neutralized by my lack of Spanish vocabulary, I guess. I believe we can neutralize words by just not giving a damn about it.
Well, but in saying that, though, if this person is directing those words at you specifically in your face, and you can feel, you know, the tone or their emotion in their words, you will get the message, I think, because that's a non-verbal message that we are, as humans, we have many different ways of taking in messages that are not just words. And that's why I say, you know, these words can be used against us, but they can also be used for us. So it's like a double-edged sword, basically. And if you put an S in front of the word, you have sword, right? So anyway, sure. And then there's also another thing, the pen is mightier than the sword. So again, this technology of language is very interesting study. And you said you are a teacher. So you, I believe you said that you were a teacher, right?
I taught English as a second language. So that was how I ended up living in Asia for a few years and teaching English to people who, you know, it's not their first language. And English it's just a nightmare to teach. It's so,
yes.
Oh my God. It made me really grateful. I was like just born into an English speaking family and culture, because I would hate to have to try and learn English later in life. It's ridiculous. There's so many exceptions to every rule.
Right. That's also, I totally agree. That was something I was going to hit on in this, in my notes here, just like, you know, taking different words that are spelled the same and but they're not pronounced the same, or vice versa. If there's a word that's pronounced the same, but it's got a different spelling, and people, I feel, you know, sorry for people who do not, who are trying to learn English, and with the slang that we use, and then, you know, it's hilarious. Yeah, there's so much confusion.
So much confusion. It's like they're set up to fail because, of course, I don't have any examples now right off the top of my head, but so many words where just one letter changes and it's pronounced completely differently and it's not logical. And you're like, well, why is it? I can think of one, like maybe cough, COUGH, when you have a cold and you cough, but then you would have like the branch of a tree, the bough, B-O-U-G-H, that would be pronounced bow. So cough and bow, but they're spelt the same. Am I right about that?
Or dumb and dumber and numb and number.
Yeah.
There's like so many examples like that. And, you know, all the shuns at the end, confusion, you know all that stuff. Yeah. It's just crazy. I have like, but then there's also things, you know, like there's this word I happen to hit on a lot is bonds, you know, like you have a bond, which can mean a bazillion different things. Like you have your stocks and bonds, you have a friendship bond, you have a physical bond, you know, like you're tied up, you know.
You're bound.
Yeah. Exactly. And then it's kind of a, in a slavery, like if you're in a slave type of, well, after the break.
Truth Meets is supported by listener donations. You can support us too. Clicking on the donate link, truthmeets.com. Click on the donate link.
And we're back. And I see that, let's see, I'm looking through my notes to see what other words that, we were looking at, but we're back on truthmeets.com. I'm here with Serena, a new member here in the Discord, helping me out with my Remember Who You Are show. Let's see, let me go back to some of my other words. Like something interesting is like we call cell phones, where else do we use the word cell? Like a prison cell, right? And then we have users. The only other place that you use that term, a user, is like a drug user. I mean, they just push Beachy, all these things together.
Beachy, in Australia and also in the UK, the term cell phone isn't used. We say mobile phone. And we've always said mobile phones here in Australia since they first came on the market. And same thing in the UK where I lived for years. It's your mobile phone. It's your mobile. I know Americans say cell phone, but we just don't use that, term here. And I don't know about European countries or Asian countries if they call it cell or mobile, but it's interesting that, Australia and the UK didn't adopt the cell term for, I don't know why.
Right. That's interesting because, as far as, Australia, UK and America and Canada, I feel like we're all kind of the same, you know, but in terms
the
of
same, but different in a lot of ways. Many things are the same because obviously we're Western cultures and, you know, a lot of things are the same. But little things like that, like it's not something that you would think of. But if you flew to Australia and got off the plane and then you were going through security and the security guy said to you, oh, can you hand me your mobile? And you'd be going, my mobile what? But he would mean your phone, your mobile phone. But it's not the kind of thing that you. I knew that Americans say cell phone just from watching TV because we're exposed to so much American culture. But there must be a reason why some countries just since these type of phones were first came into the mainstream use, which I guess was the late 90s. Around 2000, maybe?
They came out because I think I had one in the mid-90s. I remember having one. And I remember not everybody had one. They were kind of a novel thing. And it was quite early, but they didn't actually come into, you know, where everybody had them until probably, I would say, the early 2000s, like definitely after 9/11, because I know a lot of people say, you know, why didn't we have a lot of pictures of 9/11? And you know, because people didn't have phones.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't have their mobiles.
I got my first phone in 2002, I remember, and it was such a novelty, and it was a flip phone. And of course, the internet wasn't on your phone then. You know, if you wanted to to send an email or look for a website or something, you had to do that on a computer. It took a few more years, I think, before internet on your phone became sort of normal, which it is now. But yeah, I've also been in Canada, spent time in Canada, and as you say, they say cell phone. It's a North American thing to say cell phone. So there must be a reason why some countries say mobile phone and other countries say cell phone. Why is the, like, there would be a reason, Beachy, but we don't know what that reason is.
Well, again, I think, well, the, in we ha- I in my experience, so I have I used to work in Silicon Valley. I have a big background in technology, and the reason I left was because I saw all of this, you know, what it was, you know, coming to. We had all this technology. At first it was like it was freedom. I mean, in the 90s when I was in Silicon Valley, it was, you know, everybody, it seemed like, oh, we were, you know, marching towards this great, beautiful, free world. We were going to have all this technology. Everything is, you know, there's no racism. We weren't arguing. There was no, you know, there were all these issues that we have now. They were kind of not there, you know, or at least in my world, they weren't. You know, I went to work, we had all different kinds of people in our offices. We, you know, the immigration thing was, you know, we didn't have a problem with that so much, but you did notice it. But it was like, you know, they told us we didn't have enough, you know, people to man the desks, so we had to bring in, you know, outside. But yeah, again, as you know, experience and you kind of get to see all this stuff that's going on, and the observer in me, you know, saw a lot of things that were not what they were, you know, mm-hmm. originally advertised. Mm-hmm. So yep. Again, you know, once you see the writing on the wall, then you can kind of, you know, see that they are lying to us, and they're telling us one thing and doing another. And again, it's all about the culture and the you know, the narrative and what you're, everybody's doing. And, you know, you start asking questions and, you know, you're being marginalized. And I mean, it's very interesting. Like I said, when I saw the Mad Men stories, I think that was in the early 2000s, that yeah. just was screaming, you know, all the corporate, you know, culture, all the psychology that was being used on us, all the marketing that, and they even said it over and over again in those shows about how they were manipulating people to buy their products. And even though it was mostly about products, it also was ideas and you know, lifestyles and images and just like you said, behaviors. The whole you know, it was a it is still a psychological operation. You know, marketing in general, and you know, the news. And I came to realize, you know, of course, the news that everybody here in these servers, that, you know, everybody, because we all came together mostly about 9/11, you know, and they talked about all the, you know, crazy things that didn't make sense. And, you know, we all, you know, we used to talk about it endlessly, about all the little nuances and, you know, planes or no planes, CGI, explosions, whatever.
They couldn't pull 9/11 off now the same way they couldn't pull it. But they would have no chance of. And can you imagine them now trying to pull off that moon landing nonsense? And you know, the president talking to some guy on the moon from a
on his mobile.
It was the landline phone. plugged into the wall. And if it's talking to the guy on the moon, give me a break. But, you know,
well, people exactly.
were a lot more naive then.
Right. And we were finding out about that. And then, you know, like you said, as I was going along with all this stuff, now, even post 2020, I started studying the law and legal terms and legal terminology, which is another big can of worms and words that are used against us and horrific ways that we can't imagine and most people are so oblivious to, and that is that falls into the censorship where there's all these things that we're not even told about. So, you know, I think to my everything is a psyop, you know, in our world today. You know, you got the medical industry, you've got the education, you get the laws, all the legal stuff. We have, you know, again, and then there's television and sports and movies and all of it. It's just crazy when you think about everything we're told is not.
Well, I was brought up heavily Catholic, Catholic schools, you know.
Oh, yeah, like, and religion too.
That really messes with your mind. I mean, I was still deprogramming myself from the Catholic stuff well into my 30s. Every now and then, you know, something would pop up and I'd think, oh, that person's not baptized. And then I'd think, what? What does that mean, baptized? Like, that's just...
Yes.
You know, because it's pumped into you at such a young, vulnerable age, you're just a child, a tiny little, I mean, I started going to mass twice a week when I was 5. So your brain's like a sponge at that age. And when you're being told, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff about the Catholic Church and you're told that the Pope is literally on the same level as God, or he's God's right-hand man or something. Like, what?
He's the vicar. What? He's the vicar. They say he's the vicar of Christ, which actually means he's the stand-in, yes, which is crazy.
Well, how does that work? How can a human? No, that's yes. No. That's not happening. But, you know, I mean, that was just one way. But I started to disconnect from that as a teenager and then slowly over the years, more and more, it all just seemed like bullshit to me. So many ordinary aspects of just ordinary life that didn't make sense to me. And these days, you know, I don't even really get upset about many things. I just think, yeah, whatever. I just try and unplug from it and try and create a life for myself that I enjoy, that I'm happy with, try to connect with good people. But I don't want to get angry. I still get angry when I think about the COVID thing, like the way we were abused and locked up, and like I still have a grudge about, like, I can't believe that happened and that people went along with it.
It anyway. Is like a scary nightmare that we've all lived through. And it is, I believe we still are working through that. There are still traumas. I mean, sometimes when I go to the store, just going shopping is traumatic because, you know, all that nonsense we had to do, you know, with the lines and the, you know, you hear somebody sneeze and everybody freaks out. it's like somebody dropped a bomb and it's just crazy. But, okay. So in all of that, so, you know, we have that, and I think we talk about that a lot, and we've discovered that, and here's my thesis here, is that we have all that stuff stuffed in our brains, all those words, all those phrases, all that programming that we have stuck that we, like you said, we kind of need to get it out. And the good news is that these, you know, words are, you know, they use them for a reason because it's powerful. And so we just need to use different words that have more, you know, that changes the feelings around it. Because just like, you know, when you hear a word that, you know, and everybody has these, you know, like when you're a little kid, you know, when something horrible happens and, you know, you have all these memories surrounding it, like a music, you have some, maybe some smells, maybe any kind of a, you know, memory that was going on at that moment, it all comes back to you when you get a trigger word or a trigger, you know, smell or a trigger feeling, whatever.
Smells are a big one. Smells are very, very powerful. Yes. Reviving, you know,
activating. Songs or commercials, television commercials. But so, you know, if you imagine how powerful those are, it's, you know, we can turn them around. We could just notice it. First of all, you have to notice it, and then you have to redirect those feelings, or, you know, understand what was it that, you know, the issue was, of course, you know, what horrible thing was going on. I mean, sometimes it could have just been, you know, one of your friends, you know, called you a bad name or said something mean to you or something, you know, I mean, something not so horrible, and you just kind of have to get over it, right? But, you know, obviously there are bigger traumas that people need to deal with, but I think, again, if you just change your languaging, like just like what we were saying, like, okay, change your cell phone to call it a mobile phone instead of a cell phone, or, you know, I mean, something as simple as that, you know, because there's so much more information in a feeling too. Because like when you connect a word and a feeling, it's not just, you know, there's a whole host of information and colors, like we just said, like in sounds and music, all that stuff kind of works together. And we have to like reprogram that so that we could get into a good vibration that we can, you know, feel good about. Like, you know, when you meet somebody that you just kind of get a good feeling about them, and all of a sudden, you know, you feel happy because you're hanging out with them. And, you know, you can't see that, but you can, you sense it, you recognize it, and, you know, you kind of have to figure to that.
And it's absolutely real. Our nervous system perceives energy. And if somebody is, you know, standing next to you radiating anger and rage and you know, aggression, even if they're not moving or not speaking, and you're not even looking at them, you can feel it. Absolutely, you can. It's right? it affects you.
Exactly. But, you know, and like I said, you if you take the time to recognize these things, and you can just move away from them or don't get involved with them. Because I don't know about you, but as a young person, sometimes you used to get those hits. Don't go with that person. Don't hang out with that person. No. Don't engage. No. And you figure it out. You know, a few months later, you know, maybe I shouldn't have hung out with that person. And we need to pay attention to these signals that we're giving ourselves. And a lot of times we can avoid, you know, bad things that way. But, it, you know, again, it's like you just observing and recognizing and using that, our internal dialogue, because, you know, we have these mindsets, you know, and just think of that term, a mindset. It's like you're set in concrete. We got to go get our, you know, what do you call it? What are those machines that break up the concrete? Get those and start getting rid of all of our bad, the way we speak to ourselves. You know, when you tell yourself, oh, I can't do that, you have to say, well, today I'm looking for a way to do that. I don't have it now, but I'm working on it. So, you know, you say can't, that just, like you said, just stops everything right there, and you're done. But, you know, we have to recognize that we're responsible for our own self-sabotage, not to mention all the crap that's being thrown on us constantly. But we can change our own language, the way we speak to ourselves, so we can turn everything around and be more positive.
I think it's really important, Beachy, to give ourselves a break. You know, give yourself a break. Give yourself a pat on the back for surviving the bomb.
No matter what you say,
you're listening to Conversation
or your preoccupation
on truthmeets.com.
You can practice every day.
And now, back to the conversation.
The art of conversation.
And we're back. Truthmeets.com. You're here with Beachy and Serena, a new member here at the truthmeets.com. And we're working out all this word salad that we're always working with here. And we're gonna fix it though. We're gonna make it good again.
Yeah, of course. That's the plan.
Yeah. This was great. This is a good job. I want to thank you for coming on and fleshing this topic out with me.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm just really over the moon to be here and to be connecting with people who are, you know, just. It's really become like living in an alternative reality now, to the point where the conversations I have, and look, I've got friends who are lovely people. I enjoy their company. I like spending time with them. They're great, but I simply cannot tell them who I am really and what I believe and what I just can't do it. I mean, I can't even discuss, you know, so many things. I'm sure, you know, there's no point because they're not going to understand. And what would it achieve? It won't achieve anything because they're not going to change their mind and I'm not going to change my mind. And that's okay. That's fine. We can still be friends. But I am also, you know, very eager to also make friends who I can, reveal the extent of my conspiracy theory.
Like, absolutely. You found the right place. Like I said, you have found the promised land. So I think you and Verilicious are going to have a great conversation too, because she's right there. She says she's not far from you. And
Crazy. I know. I'm really excited about that. Thank you so much, Beachy, and we'll catch up soon.
Yes, and I will close the show out now and we'll come back another time. Everyone out there, thanks for listening and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Somewhere long again. soul.